Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing all right. Thank you very much.
Good, good. So this is for season 4, episode 6, called Cornered. What do you make of this one?
I rather enjoyed this episode. We got a bit of Heisenberg in this episode, I think.
Oh, and yes.
A little taste of him. I mean, quite an iconic kind of taste of actual Heisenberg, I think, this time around, even though he does revert back to Walt fairly quickly. And but yeah, there was a definite Heisenberg moment in this one. So that was quite nice to see. We haven't had a huge amount of those, you know. And as the show is called Becoming Heisenberg, you know, we highlight these things when they come up. And you've got the whole car wash thing coming out. Skyler getting more suspicious of Walt. The car stuff with Jesse. So yeah, it covered like a good amount of stuff this episode. I thought it was really quite solid.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. With the moment that you're obviously referring to, that was one that I had in my mind. I knew we definitely hadn't come across it yet, because you'll know if you do, and obviously we both did. And I thought that, okay, obviously we're getting less and less obviously of the show left as we go through, because that's how that works. And the camera was sort of like, because I kind of remembered like some of the camera placement and sort of there in the bedroom when he says that and all that sort of thing. And I was like, oh, is this the moment? So it was one of them ones that like those big ones that you remember that stand out, but I couldn't remember just like exactly where it came up. So it was kind of a nice surprise in a way. But yeah, this episode's fantastic. It's interesting how much you have got built up at the moment, considering for some shows they would be doing this momentum at about episode 10 or so. And given we've still got, you know, a chunk of the show left, we're kind of hovering around mid-season. I mean, you can't have half of 13, but in and around sort of mid-season, and you do have some of these big scenes playing out. And it's nice as well that, because we've sort of said about how, you know, you go in with episode 1, that's sort of the settle back in episode, then you had a couple of episodes of meandering in a certain way but sort of building things up, and then some episodes to pay those off, and then the show after it had those two episodes has really kind of just boosted its momentum, which is really, really good to see. I'm not going to try and sit here and compare this to Gen V, but it is interesting, and obviously this is a coincidence, of like what I spoke about, and I won't get into it here because it's for the Gen V stuff, where that show has ended up by its penultimate episode and how it sort of has relied on that. And then you look at this here, which obviously this is a different caliber of a show, and the point that it's built itself up to, but we're mid-season, so you've got a lot of room left in the season to sort of keep working with the things that you got, which is really, really great as well. So because some shows do that well and some of them don't, in a way of, okay, we'll do not in a way of a slow burn either, because I recognize what that looks like, but in a way of, we're gonna sort of do some stuff early in the season, and then the sort of, oh, we got 3 episodes left, let's ramp things up kind of thing, in the way of, mm-hmm. oh, we're gonna save like all of our eggs for the season finale kind of thing, which the show doesn't really do that. So there's different ways of doing those sorts of that kind of pacing, I suppose. But yeah, masterclass of acting in this episode. You've got obviously Skyler considering certain stuff. Another truck scene, which I don't remember how many of those there are, so that was an interesting surprise for that. So that was pretty good, and an interesting end to the episode, which obviously we'll talk about when we get there. So anyway, I think that's pretty much it for the pre-talk stuff. We've got plenty here to break down as we get into it, but before we get into that, let's get into some housekeeping, and we'll let you know what we've been up to on Entertainment Talk. See you for that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Koalu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Koalu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Koalu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, speaking of Gen V, which of course comes out on Wednesdays, we had the penultimate episode of Season 2 yesterday, which it feels like it started yesterday almost. Feels like it's come and gone very quick. A very, very big episode, and if you want to know what I mean about, obviously, the momentum stuff I just talked about, then that'll be on that, but it is obviously a spoiler podcast as well. But yeah, talked about that for Season 2, Episode 7, with the season finale next week, and there's no news on renewal yet for Season 3. I did check on the podcast and look into that. It says to do with the fact that The Boys is ending next season, and how this is going to obviously feed into that, so you got a bit of difference there, but that's for Gen V at the moment. Over on Gaming Talk this week, plenty of stuff we talked about. It was a very big show. We talked about Bluepoint Games, which is, of course, part of Sony's first-party studios. They bought them a few years ago. If you remember, 5 years ago or so, they worked on they released the Demon's Souls remake, which was fantastic for PlayStation 5. They've become sort of Sony's remake-like studio, and they posted a job listing about doing a third-person, like, melee combat-focused game, so me and Robert talked about what game that could be for, so that was interesting to do. We talked about Expedition 33 again. It's doing really, really well for sales. There's going to be an update for the game, and within that we talked about the Golden Joystick Award nominations and the very odd choices for both of their PC Game of the Year and Game of the Year. There's a big game missing from that list, which I didn't know about that list until Robert read it out in the show, so it was a nice surprise for him to kind of read that out, and that was very odd. And we talked about loads of stuff on the podcast, but we also talked about game sales as well. It was a chart that I had that I read through and things like that, and of course our impressions on what we've been playing. Over on Hear Me Roar, which is for Yellow Jackets on Paramount Plus and Showtime, I talked about Yellow Jackets ending with Season 4, which we did touch upon on Geek Town this week as well, but of course on that podcast, on Hear Me Roar, I got into the more spoilery side of things, and you know, there was plans for 5 seasons and how things have changed and stuff, so I talked all about that over on Hear Me Roar. And it's also coming back next year as well, which we didn't really expect. Also, we've got, of course, more Breaking Bad, more Gen V stuff. Of course, yeah, there's been international breaks. I know United cast for a bit, but there was the 3-1 Brentford one, which was the last one, and the 2-0 Sunderland win. And, of course, we come back this weekend, as the Premier League does as well. We've got Liverpool on Sunday, and we'll see how that goes. Anyway, it's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into 406 Cornered. Speaking of the truck, another Los Pollos, Hermanos truck is raided by the cartel. This time, the 2 guards in the truck are killed by the truck's exhaust being blown through the vents, and the cartel members find the tubs with the blue meth, which we connect to later. As I kind of mentioned before, when we had the Mike version of this, which of course he didn't die, he got himself out of that situation, although their tactics was a bit different with this one, so we can talk about that in a second. Obviously Mike didn't die from that, but same exact same kind of setup and everything, and I didn't remember, like, yeah, anything about what this led to? Of course, there's the whole Jesse thing with Mike later and in the lid, and we can get into those bits when we get into them. But yeah, as I said at the time, when I would say there's a lot of classic like Breaking Bad desert scenes, and you know, people being shot in deserts, or a mix of those kinds of things. I mean, we're also talking about the pickups that Jesse was doing with Mike and him taking out to the desert. What does that mean? So yeah, deserts and Breaking Bad aren't an unusual thing, but just in terms of where this was going, I love how the editing was the same as well, in terms of you start the episode and it's the sort of dark, the dark breathing scene at the beginning, which is almost like the exact same as the way that Mike's is edited. Mm-hmm. from the last episode or the one before. I think it was last episode, right? The shotgun episode.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Same sort of cold open. So yeah, I like that the editing is the same. I mean, you know, if it works, don't change it, kind of thing. And yeah, one of the interesting parts to me with the different tactic, and maybe this is where the other guys got it wrong, and of course Mike sort of outsmarted them, because they lock the door, they do the thing with the gas on the truck. The guys do, however, start, like, shooting the doors, and you look at that and you think, okay, that should work. And they go up to it and they try and get, you know, some air from it. Maybe it was, like, too late at that point, I guess, because it had been a minute since the other gas and stuff started getting put in there. But, yeah, it's interesting when, like, they're trying to bang this door down. It's like, nah, that you're not breaking that from the inside. That thing is locked up with, like, the red thing that they use. What I also kind of found, like, not funny, I didn't laugh at it, but kind of amusing in a way, is the way that these guys, and they're probably used to doing this by now, this is probably something that they do almost every day, or at least similar stuff, they set all this up, right, and then they just kind of sit around and have a snack, and like, let's just wait for this to play out, get what we need, and then just kind of stroll off. And the way like one of them throws a sandwich to the other, it it's all just very, very casual. I thought that was interesting and kind of amusing in a certain way. So, yeah, another cool cold open. Again, I didn't know where this one was going to go either, but we find out sort of some more stuff by the end of the episode. Anyway, what do you think of the cold open here?
Yeah, it's clear that they've changed tactics. They are trying something different, because the sort of direct approach of just like shooting the hell out of the truck didn't work last time. So yeah, I mean, you know, this is a smarter way of maybe doing it. I mean, clearly it worked this time around. So, you know, it was a smarter thing for them to do. They got what they wanted out of it. I don't know where this escalates to from this. I can't quite remember, but I'm interested to see what happens moving forward. Because, you know, I mean, they obviously know these are the routes, and there is a conversation that Gus and Mike have later as well, which sort of adds to hints at maybe where this is going. But yeah, it's sort of interesting to see this happening, and you know, them switching up tactics. Clearly it didn't work last time, this one did. We'll see where it goes from here.
Speaking of shooting, I just kind of thought of something on the spot, that those guys before, like, couldn't shoot their way in, and then this time the guys can't shoot their way out, but it's the other group, I suppose. So yeah, that was an interesting little, if that was intentional or not, I don't really know. So anyway, moving on from that, Skylar White is worried about Walt, suspecting that he is in danger due to the death of Gail, which of course was talked about at dinner the night before, maybe a few nights before, whatever. Walt reacts angrily, telling her about his importance in the drug trade and implying that he killed Gail, prompting Skylar to take Holly and flee the house. This is a bit later. At the Four Corners Monument, she ponders escaping Colorado, but ultimately reconsiders. There's like a coin thing going on from that. But before we get to the Skylar stuff, yeah, so this is the one we were talking about before, right, where yeah, he goes like, I am the danger, I'm the one who knocks, and that kind of iconic stuff comes out. Absolute acting masterclass from both of them. I mean, in different ways, which is interesting as well, because you've got the setup of it, right, of this just general conversation. Like, it starts off kind of calmly and then just sort of escalates from there. And then you get two different types of really excellent acting, which is, at least to me anyway, because you've got Brian as Walt here, who's got like the monologue duty, if you want to call it that. And then the way, like, he's doing all that and doing obviously like certain facial acting and things like that. And then I love from Anna Gunn, of course, plays Skylar here. There's this great silent bit of facial acting from her, and this sort of who is this man I was just talking. That's the sense that I got from her, is like, who is this man who's just talked to me? Because that I got this look, this sense from her, with the look of kind of, that's not Walt who was just speaking to me. That's like somebody, there's somebody else in this house kind of thing. And Anna played that so well. I think as well. I think I remember reading, or watching, this was about 10 years ago when I, obviously in 2014 when I was watching the show. I remember the director, or there was like a mic person, or somebody that was on the crew in an episode, in this episode, and I can't remember if it was exactly this scene, but it was a bedroom scene heavy with dialogue between the two of them, so it might have been this one. And there was something that like happened in the scene. I can't remember what it was, and I think it was the person who was holding the mic or something is like, I just let you two just kind of go for it because you were just killing it so much. I think it probably was this scene that he was referring to, but I think he said something like, oh, there was a piece of direction, or there was something he was going to do, like intervene in a certain way. But he's like, you guys are just killing it so much that I just kind of left you to it. I sort of just remember that in my mind for some reason, which is really great. But no, you get the classic, like, I'm the danger, I'm the one who knocks. And then I love the two follow-up bits here, because you've almost got, you know how we don't have sort of, okay, let's say season one, episode one to season three, episode six or something is Walt, and then flip a switch from that point to the end of the series, it's Heisenberg. That's like not how this has worked. You've had bits and pieces throughout, and we've kind of like, you know, analyzed the scenes as we've gone through and said, okay, you know, which version of which of the two of them is this and that kind of thing. I quite like here as well that, again, both from Brian and from what Walt is actually doing, you deliver this monologue, you like become Heisenberg for that moment and sort of get that out of his system almost, and then like goes for a shower, and you can almost see this kind of, not necessarily that he's washing Heisenberg off himself, but this kind of, that's relaxing him and bringing him kind of back down. And I remember watching that bit in this rewatch for what we're doing now, and it's sort of like, if you think about it like a gauge or like a temperature, like, okay, the gauge has reached its full, he's switched into Heisenberg, he's given that sort of monologue, and then it's like, rather than him, he hasn't become Heisenberg yet. There's still Walt there, and he still spends time in this episode as Walt, but it's becoming, you know, more frequent as Heisenberg. And then there's just the shower scene where it's like, that's the thing that's like, he's taking himself out of the like room, out of the equation, and it's sort of like almost cooling himself down back to, like, cooling the temperature off back down to Walt. That was kind of what I got from that, which was really great. And then just, like I said, this bit from Skylar of sort of, I don't know who that is that's just talked to me, but that's not Walt, that's some other guy, and I'm not sure what to do about that. So yeah, just, this is probably one of the top five, top 10 maybe best scenes of Breaking Bad, I would say. I mean, there's a lot of incredible ones obviously, but probably top 10 somewhere. Anyway, what did you think of this scene?
Well, there's an interesting thing from a costuming point of view, actually, on
Oh
this,
yeah.
because after Walt takes the shower, he's wearing a quite a bright red shirt beforehand, and then after, I think he comes out of the shower, he's changed into a dark red shirt. And there's a lot of fans, particularly, that were talking about this at the time about, you know, is that a sort of symbolization of
Ah.
Walt turning darker and you know, becoming Heisenberg? And I think there is something to that, and it's interesting. We've talked about Heisenberg popping up earlier on, and I think this is possibly the first time we see actual Heisenberg. We've seen bits and pieces of him earlier, but I think it's almost Walt pretending to be Heisenberg a lot of the times we've seen him before this. It's Walt trying to be big, trying to be bad, and not maybe pulling it off. It's still sort of Walt pretending. And I think this is one of the first, if not the first time, we actually see Heisenberg as that almost split personality. And this particular speech is the thing that really sort of turns that. And as I say, he's not there fully, as we've pointed out, because he takes that shower and suddenly it's Walt again, and he regrets talking to Skylar like that. It's clearly Heisenberg isn't entirely him. He's very much Walt is still under there. And I think arguably Walt is still there right until the very end, to a certain extent. But it becomes less and less as you get further into the show. There are still bits and pieces of him, but it's sort of almost who is in the driving seat. And for that scene, Heisenberg is very definitely the person in the driving seat. And then he takes the shower, he gets out, Walt is back, and he's regretful of how he handled that. So it's an incredibly powerful scene, and one of the most iconic scenes, I think, in the show. Interesting, there's a note on here that says Samuel L. Jackson, he was doing raising some money for Alzheimer's research, and actually did that Breaking Bad monologue from this scene as a sort of as a video. It's sort of raising money for Alzheimer's research, apparently. And he did the whole "I'm the one who knocks" speech as part of that, because he's apparently a huge fan of Breaking Bad. So yeah, that's kind of awesome. But yes, this is a sort of interesting side note. But yeah, I mean, it is one of the big kind of moments in the show, and it is, I think, the first time we really see Heisenberg break out and take control.
See, it's interesting because, like, Skylar has the more subtle thing going on here, which is her reaction, and I didn't remember that as well, because the thing you kind of would remember is obviously, I'm the danger, I'm the one who knocks. It's the monologue that you remember. So I didn't actually remember how Skylar reacted specifically. So that was just really good. Again, you write things well, you put talent in front of it, and this is what you get. So, yeah, it's great stuff. I don't have that much to say about her going to. There's this obviously the place she goes to, and there's the four different locations, and obviously here she's doing the thing of trying to, I guess, pick the next place to go to, and it keeps landing in the one place, and then she kind of scrapes the coin over. I don't speak that much here about camera work sometimes in the show, and that's something I do appreciate in different stuff. I mean, I'm still more of an audio person than like a visual person, but yeah, some of the camera work sometimes is really great as well, as I've tried to mention before. Sometimes just subtle little touches or camera placements and things like that. So that was quite a good bit. I also didn't remember that she did this because, like
No.
I said, I couldn't really remember what she did or how she reacted to this. So yeah, it was an interesting little I guess end piece for this until we move on to things later. Did you, first of all, did you remember that Skylar did this, and what did you think of it?
I didn't remember this scene at all, but yeah, it's almost kind of funny in the way that, she flips the coin, it lands in Colorado, then she flips it again, it lands again in Colorado, then she sort of tries to drag the coin across to New Mexico and then kind of gives up and looks at Holly and just kind of goes and gets back in the car and decides to stay. But yeah, I honestly didn't remember this. The Four Corners is basically the border of New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. It's a sort of iconic kind of place. And yeah, I thought that was just it's a really interesting little scene that I completely forgot about.
But yeah, that's what she does next. Walt receives the keys to the car wash from Bogdan, and avenges his past insults by making Bogdan leave behind his framed first earned dollar, which Walt kind of, he doesn't gently break it, but then very gently gets it out, whether that's because there was glass in there or it's just a particular movement, but he gets that out anyway, and he buys a soda with it. And then we'll talk in a minute about him giving Walt Jr. a car as
well. A car,
yeah. So after Bogdan walked out here, I was looking at this, and I was like, okay, I don't think we see him again after this. I don't remember.
Not that I remember.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah. Whether he's in, is he in Better Call Saul or something? Because obviously Better Call Saul's before this, but that didn't really involve the car.
Yeah, not that
it,
I remember.
But no, he was cool to have around for the purposes he was there, so that was great. Again, I know I talk about like egos and the male ego of this show and how driven that is into the plot and stuff. And while that's obviously more subtle here than a, you know, scene with Gus or something, there was some interesting sly, more kind of, it's interesting because you just had Heisenberg deliver this like monologue, and here it's sort of, I don't know, I couldn't quite work out, okay, because he's not acting Walt, but I don't know this is Heisenberg necessarily, but there was a couple of looks that he gives, a couple of those sort of flat looks towards Bogdan of like, this is my place now. I used to be kind of, I got a lot of this sense of, you know, I used to be under your thumb, now it's a case of, you're not necessarily under mine, you're just, I've been able to kind of get you out of here, and this is, you know, like, this is my place now, kind of thing, which was kind of interesting from Walt's perspective. And it is, I don't know if I feel sorry for Bogdan necessarily, I don't know if that was the word I'd use, but there is a little bit of a slight sadness in a way of, he shouldn't really be having to sell this place because obviously we know what's happened there, but he's not been able to necessarily fight against that, and then an offer came along and some things happened and this is just the situation that he's in. He's still a, you know, nasty person and all that, and obviously he was, you know, not nice to Skylar, he wasn't nice to Walt for, you know, many years when he worked there, so there was still all that going on. But this defeated sort of behavior from Bogdan of like, no, I'm not the one who's handing over the keys now. So yeah, I don't know that sad is the word I'd use either, but a sort of just this defeated kind of attitude from him was interesting to see. I love a couple of times how, because Walt doesn't really say as much here, Bogdan says some stuff, and then you just cut back to Walt, and Walt's just got this look of like, you should go now, this is just,
yeah
I've won, kind of thing, which I thought was great. Anyway, what do you think of Bogdan handing the keys over?
Yeah, there is an element to Heisenberg in this,
in the look, I think, yeah,
but it is also still Walt, I think, because it's Walt that wants revenge on Bogdan for the way he's been treated, and the whole, it's really interesting, the whole sort of Bogdan is very much sort of going, you're buying the business as is, because of the fact that he's got caught with these fake EPA violations, which he hasn't disclosed to them and isn't aware that they're fake. So, but, you know, we know Skylar faked those. You know, she hired somebody to pretend that there'd been these EPA violations. So he has got royally screwed over, because that was the thing, the reason that got him to actually sell it. So Bogdan's assuming that, you know, Walt's going to get tanked because of the fact that, you know, there are these EPA violations, which don't actually exist. So I mean, there's all that going on, and I mean, it is a dick move not letting him take that dollar, and then the fact that Walt just goes and uses it to buy a soda afterwards is, I mean, it is a real dick thing to do, but very kind of funny. And you sort of, it's difficult because, like you say, Bogdan's a terrible person, and you know, not a very nice human being, even though we see he's get screwed over. You are sort of on Walt's side here, because you're like, well, yeah, the guy kind of deserves what's coming to him for this, because he has been like complete dick to both Walt when he worked there and Skylar since then. So, you know, I think he kind of got his comeuppance with it, but yeah, the pettiness, and I mean that's Walt all over the pettiness of making him leave the dollar because everything's as is, you know. So whilst there are Heisenberg elements to this, I do still think it's very much Walt that's doing it. So yeah, it's a really fun scene that. And there's lots of sort of things going on with it, but yeah, it's really good.
Certainly. And then yeah, Walt gives in to Walt Jr.'s pleas for a new car and buys him a Dodge Challenger. I didn't quite remember that this happened either. I didn't really remember, let's say from here on out, for however many episodes it's for, what actually happens to Walt Jr. necessarily. Including this car and just like everything else. So I didn't really remember many things that happened to him after, like, you know, the Flynn name change and that sort of stuff. I didn't really remember a ton of other things about that. I kind of, because I remembered, I won't talk about it too specifically because it does involve some spoilers, but Jesse and a certain car, and then when this popped
Yeah.
up, I was like, oh, is this linked to, I don't think this is linked to that at all though, but it made me think of
No.
that.
Yeah.
But yeah, nice that he's got him a car, but unfortunately, Skylar does talk to him later and say, like, you know, about the business stuff and what's on the books, and okay, you've just gone out and bought this, how are we going to explain that? Which seems to, I don't know how many more times that happens, but there was the wine bottle stuff, and then there was this car, so I don't know if that happens too many more times. The difference there though, I suppose, because the wine bottle was not on the card, it was cash, right? So that is obviously much less traceable, whereas this, I assume, was on the credit card and it's on the thing, and they can be more caught for that, I suppose. Because I suppose the thing that Skylar's looking at as well is, like, okay, yeah, you did just buy the car wash, but you wouldn't have really, like, got anything from that yet, so that you can't really add it up that way either. So anyway, did you remember this car bit?
I remember them buying him a car because it's a Dodge Challenger. It's a beautiful car. I mean, you know, and I mean, it's funny when he's like Walt Jr. is trying to sort of say to his mum, you know, it's all safe and, you know, I'll drive the speed limit. I mean, it's not the type of car that you kind of buy for driving the speed limit and, yeah, being responsible necessarily. So yeah, I know. I think the Dodge Challenger is one of Richard Hammond's favorite cars, as you do remember from Top Gear. But yeah, it's you know, it's a very like well-known American muscle car, the Dodge Challenger. So yeah, and when they have that conversation later, I mean, Skyler is kind of right. It's very reckless to do something like this because it's one thing with bottles of wine, you know, they're easily hideable. Whereas you with something like a car, and
Yeah,
you know,
involving
he's going to go
thousands, I
to,
assume.
yeah, involving thousands of dollars, and it's something that he's going to be driving to school. It's something he's going to go show off, and it's like, well, what, you know, where did you get the money for it? You know, it's a lot more difficult to hide. So yeah, I mean, Skyler's just entirely right in the practical side of things of like, you know, it needs to look on the books like, you know, if they're buying him a car, it's something sensible and responsible and something that, you know, they can afford. And, you know, a brand new Dodge Challenger, which I don't know how much they cost, but not going to be cheap. So
No.
yeah. Yeah, so reckless of Walt. And I get why he did it. You know, he wants to sort of show off to Walt Jr. and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, not a sensible thing to do.
It's interesting, he does go in there and they sort of look at initially some of the cheaper stuff, and then he's like, no, if you want to do this, then he looks at that. Because yeah, this ain't gonna be one of your cheap $200 to $300 cars that you can buy as a, you know, as a thing that gets him round. You know, it's not like a e-scooter or something which you can buy for a couple of £100. So yeah, anyway, Walt meets Jesse Pinkman at the lab and questions his frequent errands with Mike because they're becoming who guessed it more frequent. Jesse angrily responds that he finally is feeling useful and accuses Walt of discrediting his accomplishments. As they argue, Walt realizes Gus Fring is trying to drive a wedge between them. When they finish cooking, again, not many cooking scenes, but it's, again, kind of a little bit of a background thing. When they finish cooking, Jesse gets called away by Mike for another errand, and Jesse's just got this, like, yeah, another one kind of thing. But for another errand, leaving Walt to clean alone. Angered, Walt then bribes three laundry workers into helping him clean the lab. Tyrus later tells Walt that because they saw more than they should have, he is sending them back to Honduras, which was really sad. Actually,
yeah,
I kind of remembered these women for just being in the, I couldn't remember what they did and that, and I also couldn't remember if he did convince them or not to go down there. Again, double-sided kind of funny thing with this, because those ladies themselves, like, they're probably not bothered about, like, if they saw something, or they'll probably just be like, oh, cool, you know, a couple of however many dollars it was, quick little clean job, and then they'll just go back to their, you know, girly gossip or whatever it was that they were, you know, talking to themselves, and then just get back to it. Like, I don't imagine these three women go home and be like, oh my god, I saw this and this at work. It sort of, they, it didn't no. seem like that. But then again, with the, with when you involve Gus and everything else like that, and things have got to be perfect, you know, you can't really have anybody sniffing around. But yeah, just, again, with, I'm not going to get into it here, but in today's, you know, day and age, with discussions about deportations and how people feel about them, that kind of fed into my mind as well, about how sad that can be. But because that's one of the issues I do kind of have, is like, when somebody comes over here, or to any country, and they're like, right, I just escaped something bad or whatever, and like maybe a war-torn country or something, and then they want to come over to somewhere and then work, and they can't because the whole illegal stuff and then that. And I look at these three ladies, and it's kind of, okay, they did come from somewhere, whether they are actually legal or not, or whatever their actual status would be, they're trying to just do work and just that kind of thing. Again, I know that's different to real life scenarios, and obviously you've got Gus involved here. It just, I don't know, just kind of makes me sad a little bit when those conversations kind of come up.
Yeah.
And seeing them walk away after, like, yeah, we just did this job and it looks like they did it well, and then Walt's like kind of pleading with Tyrus of like, no, I want you to punish me. And unfortunately, Gus has actually thought of that, and it's like, this is the way to punish you, rather than doing something directly to you, which will annoy you, which you can probably deal with. It's like, okay, we're going to do something to someone else, and yeah. Anyway, so, but on the Jesse Walt stuff here, yeah, it's interesting that that's happening again. If you go all the way back to the box cutter stuff with their conversation in the diner about, like, which one of us is safe, because what happened with Victor, and then the warning there, and the whole thing with Gale, and neither of them are completely sure if, like, okay, if he kills Jesse, then Walt won't work, and obviously if you kill Walt, then the whole thing is gone, but what can they get away with? But I get Jesse's side of this as well, which is like, again, you can put the male ego stuff in here of, okay, is it because he's not asking you, or is it because, like, I'm being taken away, but that's, like, it's actually now working between Mike and Jesse? Because if you remember from the first one, it was sort of Mike doesn't really know why he's there and what's sort of going on with that. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, what do you think of these scenes here?
Yeah, I mean, Walt's conversation with Jesse, he's kind of not wrong in everything he says. I mean, he guessed the reason that that they did it in the first place, and the fact that it was a setup, and, you know, it was to make Jesse feel more useful, and he's potentially doing it to try and drive a wedge between the pair of them, you know, to sort of isolate Walt to a certain extent. I mean, he's not necessarily entirely wrong about any of that. So, you know, I mean, but it doesn't, I mean, it does get Jesse's thinking, because he does question it a bit of, like, sort of, you know, later on when he meets Gus, he does ask the question. But Arguably, Jesse has proved himself, and certainly in a scene in this, the next scene coming up, Jesse does definitely prove his worth, and it isn't a setup, and he proves that he can do this. So I think in well, Walt is correct in his assumptions of why Gus is doing it in the first place. Jesse is actually proving himself quite useful to Mike. So at this point, so I think he's sort of become useful. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic going on there. So there's that. And yeah, I'm sort of with you with the three laundry workers. I mean, the chances are they probably were, would have been there illegally, which is why he can just stick them on a bus back to Honduras. But, Tyrus is sort of not backing down. And again, it's Walt feeling guilty because of the fact that, he's got other people in trouble and he's not the one being punished because Gus won't punish him. He will punish people around him. Because that's how Gus operates. So I believe this is the first time we've actually heard Tyrus's name mentioned.
Might have been, yeah.
We knew who he was because, we've got show notes and stuff, but it's the first time I think he's actually named on screen. But yeah, I'm sort of with you. I do feel rather sorry for these women because, I mean, of course, they are unlikely to actually say anything, but there is, because, if they are of illegal status, that they're not going to want to cause waves. But equally, that does cause a problem because if they are illegal and they do get picked up, that's a bargaining chip that they could use and go, I know their West is a massive drug lab. So, you could sort of see their point of view, Tyrus and Gus's point of view of like, well, yeah, that's a danger that we don't have, and they're just three women from Honduras, and we can just shift them back to where they came from, so yeah. Sad and unfortunate and entirely Walt's fault, really, with that. So, yeah, is what it is, unfortunately.
Just kind of made me a little sad.
Yeah.
It's probably supposed to, so well.
Yeah, no, totally.
Again, it is that double-sided thing of they probably don't really care, but then because of the whole Walt thing, and then because Gus is a perfectionist, it's sort of that's why he's had to do
It's
that.
a yeah, it's a potential danger that they don't need to deal with, and whilst I don't think they would have actually said anything, there is that danger that if they did get picked up, they may do. So, it doesn't mean anything to Gus to get rid of these three people, so just ship them back off. Why not?
I mean, in that regard, though, because the way you can just sort of okay, I'm going to kill and punish Victor for something that the guys did, and then just bring Tyrus in. The way he has like substitutes, essentially, I'm mostly thinking about like a in football, someone's not good, just take him out and then just bring someone else in. But obviously, he's got like a whole network of people, so there you go. Jesse rather, and Mike scout a drug house where the blue meth from the hijacked truck, which we saw in the cold open, is being sold. But Jesse grows impatient and tricks one of the meth users into letting him inside. I believe this guy's name might be Tucker. Where he knocks out the other one, Mike notices the words. Let's give this a little go. Esther Listo Para Platicar, probably definitely not said that right, but I gave it a go. It translates to "Are you ready to talk?" written on the stolen container, which is not in the condition that it was when they first got it. So, yeah, Jesse kind of stepping up here in an interesting way. Again, I didn't remember what happened here, but as soon as you see the kind of impatience from Jesse, it's like, okay, I don't know what I can't remember what's going to happen here, but I don't think it's going to be Jesse waiting because that doesn't seem like it's going to be the outcome. But yeah, it's interesting the way kind of Jesse uses his experience here because I think he does say at one point that like, okay, I know how our meth head works, and he goes with a different approach, which was interesting. It's kind of a little funny detail about this. I know you're dealing with meth heads and they're not, you know, thinking straight, but if you go and knock on someone's door, or someone says, say now someone knocks on your door and you're trying to listen to them, and the person who's in the house with you is continuously shouting your name, you might not hear what that person has to say at the door. So, I know it's because obviously they're meth heads and stuff and they're not all thinking straight and, you know, everything else, but that was an interesting little kind of detail. But I didn't really remember any of this, like the digging the whole thing and what Tucker's doing there, and I didn't know if Jesse was like, okay, is he gonna push him in or something, or get him to look in the hole, whack him around the head with the shovel. But it's interesting as well because, okay, the door gets left open, which is the, you know, the meth head mistake, I suppose, and then sneaks his way in, and it's pretty impressive the way Jesse does deal with this guy, because, like, okay, this is a shotgun, like, if he's very, very close to you, if he fires it kind of anywhere near you, it's gonna do a lot of damage, if not very likely kill you, and he does actually manage to talk him down, which is really well done from him, so that was really great as well, which was good to see. I wonder how difficult this was out to act between the two of them as well, because it's like, okay, he's got to say some stuff, you've got to say some stuff, but every, what, 5 to 10 seconds, you've got to remember to keep shouting Tucker and not, like, don't do it at the wrong time when Aaron's talking, or, you know, it ruin the kind of flow of that as well. So I wonder what the script was like, okay, normal bits, Tucker in like capital letters, and then some more bits, Tucker in capital letters again. So there you go. But I liked that this kind of, you know, the first one was, obviously it was a setup anyway, but it was sort of Jesse sitting around sort of not getting to use his experience. And with this one being a bit more kind of, okay, we both know why we're here and it's more sort of planned. Rather than just this other thing, and then Jesse gets to use his experience, which we haven't really seen Jesse do, apart from maybe in, I think it was in season 2 or 3, you know, when they go to that house and there was the ATM incident with the young kid and his two parents who were off their heads as well.
Yes,
and he sort of got to use he got to like use some experience there. You haven't quite seen that as much. That was that was good to see as well in this. Anyway, what do you think of the scene?
Yeah, it's a great little scene, this, and I like the way Jesse kind of, you know, gets impatient and goes, you know, well, I know meth heads, and just goes out and starts digging a hole and like gets the guy to get to like take over. It's just really kind of nice. And then you've got that second junkie who's far scarier, and he manages to kind of get him with the bong. It's interesting, actually. I was just looking up the actors in that, and I mean, the guy that plays the scary junkie inside is an actor called Damon Herriman, and has actually been in a whole bunch of stuff. Played Charles Manson twice, once in the brilliant Netflix show Mindhunter, and again in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Tarantino film. And he was in Justified as well for quite a long period of time. And he was also popped up in a whole bunch of other stuff. He was in the movie, the Robbie Williams movie recently, Better Man. He played Nigel Martin Smith in that. So, you know, it's interesting to see where these kind of actors that pop up in these little roles have, you know, suddenly gone on to these other things. So the other actor, the guy that plays Tucker, Blake Beres, is not as well known over here, but probably quite well known in the US, because he was on Days of Our Lives, the big US soap, ages. So was on General Hospital for a bit, so he's more of a kind of soapy actor, but he's popped up in other little things. He did a little bit on episode of Big Little Liars and Big Bang Theory, and, you know, he's done little bits and pieces, but Days of Our Lives seems to be the big thing that he was on. But it's kind of interesting, but it's a great little scene, and it is, you know, him actually making himself useful. It's Jesse making himself useful and actually proving himself, you know, whereas the first time had been this setup, this is Mike actually going, you know, actually, yeah, he is actually an asset to this. I can see, yeah, that's sort of interesting, particularly when it comes to meeting Gus in this next scene as well.
Certainly. But with me talking about Jesse's experience and stuff, and because I've talked about Mike and his sort of obviously more sort of veteran experience in this area, and it was interesting to see the two of them kind of work in that way as well. So that was really good. Speaking of what you were mentioning, Gus meets Mike at a diner that night, and they decide to negotiate with the cartel. Outside the diner, Gus compliments Jesse's work in his with his errands with Mike, further boosting his self-esteem and loyalty. Just want to say once again, great to see John Carlos Pizzito, because it's always
Course.
great to see John Carlos Pizzito. So that was great as well. I like the sort of I guess the structure of the way this plays out, of like Jesse respecting sort of, okay, the boss wants to talk to my boss. In a way, even though they're both his bosses, but you get what I mean. And sort of doing that, and then they're talking about him, and then Jesse's just sort of waiting outside, and he looks, you know, much better than he did a few episodes ago when he was, you know, banging music and doing whatever else in the house, and he looks better and stuff. But then you've also got the one before that where it's like Mike's trying to help Jesse here a bit, and you know, offers him food, says you should eat something. Because I think Jesse was mentioning withdrawals and stuff because he's not been using, which is good to not use. But of course, there's the side effects and stuff of that, which is very unfortunate. It's quite that is quite a nasty thing in a way of like if someone does decide that okay, drugs are ruining my life or something, and because obviously your body's so used to having them, and that's why you obviously do go through it in a case, in a way of being weaned off of things, and you still use a little bit. It's just a bit sad that that's kind of a thing. But anyway, at least he's on a better path now, which is great. But no, I just love the way both pieces of dialogue are sort of exchanged between the two of them, with Mike kind of gently talking to Jesse, and then obviously the slightly more serious conversation with Gus there. And because I can't remember who this is, this group, this like cartel group that they're saying, okay, saying to Gus about, okay, do you want to go and speak to them and that sort of thing. So I guess we'll all find out together. But no, again, really great acting. More kind of like calm, subtle, but really great sort of acting here. There's no sort of, you know, screeching dialogue or big bits of dialogue. It's just general very good acting, which is great. Which is the sort of some most of the sort of scenes that Gus is in is where he's delivering these kind of gentle bits of dialogue and stuff. So anyway, what do you think of the diner scene here?
It's a really, really nice little scene with this, and sort of, Mike, he's pushing to sort of ramp this, things really up and basically go to war with the cartel. And Gus is like, no, we're going to keep this war cold. We're going to, not going to retaliate. We'll set up a meeting. We will do what they ask. We'll talk. That was the message that they gave, because, clearly they weren't going after the stuff for any reason other than to get a message to Gus that they can, and they can disrupt his supply. Because otherwise they wouldn't have just given it away to some random methods. So, I rather like that, and the fact that Jesse is sort of subdued and respectful, and he's like, he doesn't want to mess with Gus, but does ask him the question when he steps outside of like, why did you pick me? And Gus goes, because I like to think I see things in people. And whilst that might not necessarily have been the reason to start off with, I think he realizes now that maybe there is more to Jesse than, So it's a really interesting kind of slight shift in the whole dynamic with everybody there. So yeah, it's a really nice little scene.
I really like that line as well, about what he sees in people. It's very, very good. So, let's move on to the last scene, which is Skyler returns home but tells Walt to return the car because, of course, it contradicts their cover story. She acknowledges that Walt Jr. will not be happy about it, but tells Walt that someone has to protect this family from the man who protects this family, which again is just such a great idea and a great line and everything. Yeah, this is when they all get home and they'll have a conversation about that. I don't remember how Walt Jr. does react to this, but we shall also find out together. But yeah, this feels like, again, I think it's a double-sided thing of this, you know, man that she didn't recognize gave her this dialogue, and it was different and odd and probably scary to her as well in a certain way. And then there's this you know, thing with the car, and that's how that's all kind of adding up stuff. Yeah, feels like with that that things have changed a tad for Skylar, which is why she kind of said that. So very good, kind of, I don't know if subtle is the right word, but subtle kind of little end to the episode of just dropping that little bit in there, especially considering the scene that we had earlier. So
yeah,
very good end to the episode. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Skylar's point of sort of, yeah, well, basically you've just alienated me from Walt Jr. again by making her out to be the bad guy, you know, because she's going to be the one that gets blamed for the fact that the car has to be returned. So, you know, thanks for that. And her coming to the realization that Walt may be a lot more dangerous than she actually realizes, so she can't leave the, you know, I mean, she could leave, but then she'd leave Walt Jr. with Walt, and that's not safe. So she ends up coming back and needs to protect him, and she said protecting the family from the man who protects this family. So it's a really great line, and yeah, good solid place to end the episode, I think.
Certainly. All right, that's it for the end of the episode. Let's move into some feedback. Of course, if you've got any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments on the show, let us know if you've seen Better Call Saul as well, or any other bits of Breaking Bad stuff, or any other interviews or anything like that to do with the show. Let us know if it's the first time through the show, your 50th, your second, whatever. Let us know where you're at with that and what you think of the episodes and things like that and stuff. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media is eTalkUK or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Switch these around a little bit. Josh says, I noticed an edit in one of the podcasts. Who slipped up? No worries, just curious. That would have been me.
Yes,
that was me.
You dropped a spoiler, which I pointed out. I think it's probably that one, wasn't it? And yeah. I was like, that's a spoiler. You should probably take that out. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Luckily, things like that don't take terribly long to take it, especially because yes. I knew where it was and I could just find it and get rid of that. Because, yeah, I look at bits like that sometimes, like, okay, now how do the two bits of audio connect? And there's a little jump, if you want to call it, in there, but it wasn't too bad. But yes, notable that something was missing. So yeah, we'll just take that out so people didn't get spoiled.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I meticulously edit my podcast, so, you know, you tend to just go with the flow. Mine are edited quite heavily, hopefully not all that noticeable, but yes, if you listen to the Geek Town Radio one, they are edited quite a lot, so, yeah.
Yeah, but that would have been what that was. Let's go with Harrison next. Says, I've spoken to some people about the show who didn't like it, as they didn't find themselves wanting to root for Walt. How do you feel about that? I've heard one or two other similar opinions over, of course, you know, talking over 10 years ago, of like, you know, when you watch a show and you're kind of rooting for a hero, or like, you know, if a hero turns bad, then there's a different character or something. It's sort of, I suppose it comes across as a point of, okay, even if it's a case of you're not rooting for somebody, like, okay, what are you still watching a show for? Could be to do with, like, you know, being a completionist for something, or out of loyalty, or the case of a show that's like not gone so well and you want to just finish up the final season. I'm sure we've been there with a few of them, but things like, you know, Flash come to mind in terms of, okay, it's got one more season, I've been watching this for 7-8 seasons, whatever it was, and then it just, you unfortunately end up kind of dragging yourself through some shows that way. But in terms of the Walt stuff, I know this is kind of connecting to what I mentioned before, but I don't personally, talking about my first time through the show, obviously, I don't personally remember rooting for the characters. It was more to me about, like, okay, the money, the progress that's being made with, like, making the money and not making that go to waste. And, like, to me it was sort of, okay, regardless of what does happen to Walt, can that money get to Skylar, eventually Holly, obviously because she's not there at the start, and Walt Jr.? Can this family get that security of the money which Walt has worked so hard for? That was my main kind of, like, I want that to, no matter kind of what else happens, unless something terrible happens in the show, it was a case for me of, and plus you already kind of know going through that, okay, it's called Breaking Bad, this guy's going to maybe break bad and he starts, you know, eventually getting on that path, which is the thing we've been talking about. But I don't remember it being sort of rooting for the hero or Walt, rooting for Walt or that kind of thing. It was more just about, okay, can that money get to where it needs to get by the end of the show? And that was kind of my main thing. So different to, let's say, if you're watching like an ensemble show and it's like, hey, I really like this character from Game of Thrones or something and you really want them to live, or I suppose you've got more action examples of, like, okay, you're in the middle of, let's say, season 4 of 24, you're pretty sure that Jack's not going to die, but you're rooting for him to kind of save the day sort of thing. This is very kind of different to that. But again, as I mentioned, particularly with Breaking Bad and the whole, it's setting out, that to me anyway, it's setting out its objective from the start. There again just isn't too many shows. There isn't too many shows I can remember watching for sort of, okay, I hope the objective is complete, and that's the thing I'm like mainly sticking around for. Breaking Bad is full of, you know, flawed characters. So
yeah,
you know, which is the point. Anyway, what do you think of this?
Yeah, it is an interesting one. If you're trying to follow, because Walt isn't a hero, you know, you are following a character on a journey. So are you supposed to be rooting for him, or are you following the story and, like you say, you know, the objective? So I think there is a difference with something like Breaking Bad compared to certain other shows, which have, because he's not even really an anti-hero as such either. I mean, he is, the whole premise is taking a good person and making him bad. So yeah, that is a sort of interesting one with this. There are shows where you end up hate watching because you're like, I hate all these people, you know. I mean, Flash isn't a great example of that. That was just terrible, terrible writing. It wasn't necessarily sort of, you know, you were hate watching it towards the end because the writing got so bad.
And you wanted it to get better.
Grant Gustin had obviously checked out about two seasons prior to the finale. But I mean, you know, I still liked the characters. I just wish they'd been written better.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
you look at a show like, well, I mean, I've been listening to the Geek Town Radio podcast. You know, I worked my way through the whole of Scandal, and which is a great show, and the characters are quite well written. But there are points where a number of the characters who are set up as the sort of heroes in that show do some awful, awful, awful things. And you're like, well, there's no way really back for that character from what they've just done. And it has been a problem with a couple of the Shondaland shows, Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder is another one where every single character in that show is just awful by the end of it. I mean, they've all done terrible, terrible things and have very few redeeming qualities that you're sort of rooting for them by the end of it. And it is one, that is the one example, How to Get Away with Murder. Scandal sort of gets away with it just about, but How to Get Away with Murder is a really interesting one because it does get to a point where you're like, I'm not rooting for any of these people because they're all terrible. And you know, whatever comeuppance they get, fine. You know, as I say, it's slightly different with something like Game of Thrones, where it is a big ensemble cast and you do have people that you're rooting for, but there are characters which you're also rooting against quite seriously in that. But I think that's a sort of slightly different thing, you know. You know, Joffrey is a classic example of a character that he was magnetic and brilliant to watch on screen, but also when he gets his comeuppance, you sort of end up cheering, you know. Yeah. So, but that's a sort of different thing because you're not supposed to like that character. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's It's the structure of Breaking Bad and the entire premise of Breaking Bad. If you're going into it thinking you're supposed to be siding with Walt, you're not really. You know, you're following that character's journey, but you're not necessarily supposed to side with him. I think Jesse, you probably are supposed to side with, and I think you sort of, you know, it's easier to side with Jesse than it is to side with Walt, I think. But which is sort of, I think, why El Camino is quite a good end to Jesse's story, you know. But yeah, so that would really be my thoughts on it, I guess.
It's interesting when you, because all the examples you've given, when you bring up something like Yellow Jackets, because Yellow Jackets is almost kind of, and that's a bit different because you've got the young versions who are trapped on the island, and then the older ones who, you know, they survived, and but they've changed in that. And I find myself in that show because the characters, and not in a bad way, I find them to be unpredictable. Like I'm not sure what they're going to do next, but that's because of, you know, their mental state and all that sort of stuff, which is really interesting. And it's like, you start off kind of trying to love all the characters, and they keep doing these like, somewhat on purpose, but also some like accidental bad stuff. And it's like, it's like, I want you to be like better. I'm rooting for you to be better and to like realize what you're doing. And then some of these characters just like slip and slip, and then you kind of go from there. But that's like a, you know, have like the game of survival with that, and all those sorts of things. So that's like an interesting, different moral way of looking at that, I suppose. And last one is, Calvin says, first time, long time, welcome. I like your analysis of Gus and Giancarlo. What other role would you like Giancarlo to do? And with you admitting Gus's lack of screen time, what do you think makes him so great? To me, what makes him so great is just how particular he is, and just, I don't know, like every single time he pops up on screen, not only does he steal the screen every time, but you're like, you know he's going to do something interesting every single time. And it's not that the other characters aren't, it's just the way, it's like the way he comes across, the way he presents himself. And it also, to me, does help that, okay, at the moment he's the villain, although if you want to look at Walt and say he's maybe the bad one or whatever, or it depends where you land. And it's sort of, he's not one who's like some raving madman, or so he's not like, you know, Tuco from season one. He's not like beating people up or anything else like that. And he's using his dialogue more, which I kind of find more interesting. And it's those sorts of things. But then it's also just the very specific way that Giancarlo plays him. And he does that similarly with his other roles, but he really, really does it here a lot as well. Because yeah, he is being used like somewhat sparingly at the moment, but it's just when he comes on the screen, it's, you know, something great's gonna happen. I would like him to be, you know, because we're gonna obviously probably get a new bunch of X-Men after obviously all the Doomsday stuff and whatever else is gonna happen there. For him to be Professor X, I think that would be great, because that's another character who, like, while you look at, is it Moff Gideon in Mandalorian? While that character's involved in like some combat and he's fighting, and there's some of that presence there, for me, when you look at someone like Giancarlo and what he can bring to the table, it's much more about that dialogue stuff. So rather than giving him, I mean, I don't think he could do a role badly, let's say that, but if you want to give him one where he's going to really excel and you're going to get like the very best of him, I think if you put him there and you just give him lots of dialogue to just chew on and have a great time with. I've heard some people recommending him as like Magneto as well, which is obviously there's the clash between
I
them
was
two
gonna
there.
say I was gonna say Magneto. He would make a very good Magneto. I mean, not that he's ever gonna do, I wouldn't have thought either of those roles, because he did appear, I seem to remember, in the MCU as
Oh yeah, he was in Captain America.
because he was in the latest Captain America as a different character, so it's unlikely he's gonna land either of those roles, but he would make quite a good Magneto or Professor X, I think. I mean, the other thing, of course, he's in at the moment is Gen V, and that's a sort of interesting character for him as well. I mean, I think the thing that makes the character of Gus so good. He's Gingallo. I mean, he is a phenomenal, phenomenal actor. And I have actually seen him at a Comic Con do a sort of hour long kind of monologue thing, which is the closest thing I've ever seen at a comic come to a TED talk, effectively. It was absolutely magnetic. And I mean, it just shows you it's him that does that in the role. It really is, because it was absolutely mesmerizing. And I mean, yes, I am a fan of his, but just the way he spoke about stuff, the way he talked about everything from sort of his acting work to kindness to others and approach to the world. And I mean, it was a really, really interesting thing. Sadly, there's no video of that because he asked for it not to be recorded. So presumably because he does something similar each time, and sometimes they just don't want it recorded. But he was just brrilliant. And so I think it's just him. I will happily watch him in anything because I think he's a phenomenal, phenomenal actor.
Can he play Magneto and Professor X? Can we just do
Maybe,
that?
yeah.
There's also obviously a bunch of DC roles open because it's reboot and stuff, so
Well, yeah.
maybe something there as well. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's everything. Yep, that's. Did I scroll past anything? No, I did not. All right, so that's it for the episode. Thank you all very much for listening. Of course, we'll be back next week with episode 7 next. I'm losing track. Yeah, episode 7 of season 4. So getting just past the halfway point in the season. Again, if you've got any thoughts, feelings, questions, comments about anything, we've already said how to write in, so please continue to do that. Anyway, in the meantime, if you want to check out the rest of the things that we do, we have plenty going on at the moment. So you can find TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcast over on entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms of the same name for TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcasts. If you like what you've heard and you want to support more of it, you can, of course, just listen to more podcasts on the places I've mentioned, word of mouth, social media, and you can also, if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. David, that's run by you. How's that going?
Going well. You, of course, were on the podcast this week. We
I
covered
was.
things like The Last Frontier, the new Apple series, talked about Revival, which has just landed on Sky Max over here. That's coming back for a second season, which is one of those people come back from the dead, not zombies, but like are brought back from the dead. That was a really interesting show as well. We did a roundup of New York Comic Con for the various bits of news from that. So there's Marvel and DC news in there. And we covered Ale Abbey as well, which is a game I've been playing, which is wonderfully fun. It's a bunch of drunk monks running a brewery, essentially, which is just endless hours of fun. So really enjoyed that. But you can hear all the reviews of that stuff up on episode 476. Seven of Geek Town Radio, which is available on geektown.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, we've got lots of news as well. There's plenty of stuff coming up on TV and things being announced and renewed and stuff. So you can go and find that on geektown.co.uk as well.
Cool. Yep. So go and check out the most recent episode from a few days ago, Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays. And yeah, go to geektown.co.uk as well for all the TV and film news posts. For us as well, you can find us over on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. I keep forgetting to put various different clips and bits and stuff up, but you can. It's all very loose and casual over there over on YouTube. It's almost as like a place for me to store videos. So yeah, just go check out Entertainment Talk Plays over on YouTube for all those bits and pieces. All right, thanks very much for listening, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.